Welcome to the GeoMob Podcast, where we discuss geo-innovation in any and all forms, whether for fun or profit.
Welcome to another GeoMob Podcast. This morning, it's my great pleasure to be talking with James Norris, who's the head of international affairs at Ordnance Survey and also a member of the executive committee of the UNGGIM. And that almost immediately prompts a question: why does the National Mapping Agency have a head of international affairs? And maybe we'll just touch on that in a minute. Before working at the Ordnance Survey, he was in a similar role at the Group on Earth Observations, which is an intergovernmental organization promoting the use of Earth observations. And I guess that meant you were working with or alongside my pal Stephen Ramage as well. So James and I have got loads of connections, though we're not sure that we've actually gone face to face before. So it's an absolute pleasure to have you here, James, to talk about international geo and also how that fits in with your role at the Ordnance Survey. So start out by telling us, James, how come OS has a head of international affairs?
Thanks, Stephen. It's wonderful and great to be here. And as you say, I feel like I know you from some of the conversations we've had as our ships have passed at a variety of events, and also from listening to GeoMob over the years. So it's fantastic to be able to be here and talk to you today. A very pertinent question: why does Ordnance Survey have a head of international affairs? And my role here is essentially to help connect Ordnance Survey to other national mapping agencies, to help share our expertise, so the deep expertise we have as a provider of the national map, but also to work with and learn from other governments and other mapping agencies. So it's an outward-facing role. There's a variety of touch points that Ordnance Survey has in the international space. So we do a lot of support work for our Foreign Office, so supporting other countries with their geospatial maturity. So doing a lot of work with the Foreign Office's Green Cities and Infrastructure Program. So again, sharing our knowledge with other mapping agencies and other organizations who need that support. But more importantly, or a bigger part of that as well as my role, is looking after the relationships that Ordnance Survey has with other intergovernmental organizations or other parts of the global landscape. So that could be an organization like the FIG, the International Federation of Surveyors, and actually the work that FIG does to link through to the surveyors on the ground, and Ordnance Survey as a big surveying workforce has an interest in that. Another core part of my role is, and as you mentioned in the introduction, working with the United Nations. So the United Nations has an expert committee on geospatial information management, UNGGIM, an Ordnance Survey, and I lead our UK representation and engagement to that committee of experts meeting, making sure we have the right policy expertise from across government talking, and making sure we have the right technical expertise from across government and the public sector talking. So the role I do within the UK group there is to make sure we have the right people, the right voices, and we're promoting UK policy objectives. And I guess the key thing for me, if I was to summarize it into a pithy sentence or two, is my role is really about building partnerships, building connections, influencing policy, so global policy, national policy, and more recently is supporting the development of geospatial ecosystems worldwide. So kind of taking our learnings, putting them in, but also, as I said earlier on, bringing those learnings back to OS and the UK as a whole.
Wow, sounds like a great role. One I'd love to have had a few years ago. So we're going to be talking today about reimagining the map. Mm. And this was, I believe, the theme at the Cambridge conference a few months ago. And for our listeners, the Cambridge conference is an event that runs every 4 years now, and it's been running for, I don't know, quite a long time,
yeah, 40,
50 years. And it's a conference of national mapping agencies hosted by the Ordnance Survey. I think the first one was in Cambridge. They're not always in Cambridge. The one I went to was in Southampton. And I have to say, I thought this would be a load of NMA people blathering to each other. And yep. I wasn't 100% looking forward to attending this conference, but I did attend, and it was fantastic. It was amazing. And, you know, there were a couple of people at that conference. I can't remember. There was the head of the mapping agency for Eritrea or somewhere like this. And it was, this guy had been a child soldier in the Civil War. He had become part of the government and he'd ended up being the head of the mapping agency. And just his personal story was amazing, but also the challenges that a significantly less developed country faced was something that, you know, probably I would never have thought about. So it's a great event. It's an opportunity to share thoughts. And at this year's event, Nick Bolton, who's your ultimate boss, the CEO of Ordnance Survey, said, "We're seeing a period of significant change in the world, and our role as national mapping agencies has to respond to that change. Now the majority of maps only ever exist in the digital. That's a very different place." And I wonder if you can explain that, because when I've read that through several times, and actually I was thinking, well, mapping our infrastructure, mapping our roads, mapping our buildings, mapping all the stuff that we map today, is we're a little bit more detailed, but it's not radically different to what we were doing 25 or 50 years ago.
Absolutely.
And Nick's suggesting that there's a change here, so maybe you can...
Yeah, very, very much so. I think you started off with the brief history of Cambridge Conference, and as you said, it's something that OS hosts on behalf of the global geospatial community. It's not something we run for ourselves, but it's something we put on to bring together heads of national mapping agencies in a unique environment, which is it's an invite-only event for the heads of agencies, which we feel gives it a uniqueness that you can have conversations in that forum with your peers as a head of a national mapping agency that you might struggle to have in an open forum, that you might struggle to have in your own boardroom. So it's the opportunity for people to come together and to share their challenges, to share the opportunities, and to start to think about, if you're looking at the strategic planning for your organization, what needs to be different, who you can learn from, and how you could bring those learnings back in. So, as you say, as an event, it was actually held for the first time in 1928. So we are just coming up to the 100th anniversary when we, wow, fingers crossed, host it next time. Absolutely. The history of it is quite important. And as you say, as technology changes, as the challenges we face at the moment change, we've seen that reflected across the conference program over the years. So going back to the 1920s, 30s, pause during the war years, came back in the 50s, 60s, 70s, there was a lot of focus on technology, as you would expect. And when I was doing the research for the conference and kind of looking back at it and kind of getting myself back immersed in it, we found that the word computers first appeared in the national in Cambridge Conference in the event in the late 1950s. So, you know, that's the first time national mapping agencies came together under the Cambridge Conference and started talking about computers. And of course, it's a very different world today. When we moved on to the 1970s, there were discussions around triangulation and how can you create a worldwide triangulation grid based on aerial photography, aerial imagery. So again, something that mapping agencies are still looking at today. And then when we looked through to the events in the 1990s, I think we were talking about the need for or the opportunity for a core data set for the entire world. And so these are things that, as a mapping community, we've been discussing over many, many years. And as you say, when we came to talk to this event, we wanted to theme it a little bit more future-looking, so actually reinventing the map. The reason we focused on that was we know the world is changing. We know our political situations are changing. We know our funding situations are changing. We know the technology landscape is changing. We know that people interact with maps in different ways. Someone once said to me recently, I don't have a spreadsheet on my wall, but I've got a map on my wall. You know, that is one element of people engaging with maps. But actually, maps are integral to most of the activities we do in our everyday life. And I think there was a survey out recently that's talked about the average person in GB or in the UK touches Ordnance Survey data 40 plus times a day without even knowing it. So we've kind of really seen the linking up of geospatial data into absolutely everything we do. So when we started to develop the program, and you know, I've had the privilege, I guess, of being involved in Cambridge conferences one way or another for over 10 years. I think the first event I was the chap running around the back pushing the coffee cart and making sure all the delegates had the coffee at the right time. But this event, I was super, super pleased to be asked to lead on the development of the program. So actually bringing together the different elements of it. And we started to split it off into three main elements, which we think were really important for the community. So looking at how our global context is changing, as I said at the beginning, looking at how organizations are changing, have changed, and may need to change. But also importantly, kind of getting a little bit more future focused is around the work of the value chain. And different organizations' value chain differs in different ways. Most of the information under the conference was conducted under Chatham House rule. But what we have done is we have published on the Cambridge Conference website kind of a short summary document of it, which is open to anybody to have a look at. And I'd really encourage people to engage with it. If they've got any questions, any comments, any challenges, you know, please do feed that back to us. So as we start to build the program for the next event, we can be really future focused on what people need. And I think there were three key outcomes that we pushed out from the event this year. The first one was around how to unlock value. And actually, you know, as I just talked about a minute ago, geospatial data shouldn't be considered a separate discipline. As in previously, we've siloed ourselves as a geospatial organization, but actually we're a data organization. All of our mapping agencies are massive data organizations. The second piece we talked about was around our community, and actually what can the community of national mapping agencies to do to equip the next generation of geospatial professionals? The world is changing, the world of work is changing. I mean, I've been at Ordnance Survey for 17 years, which is a long time for anyone these days. We were talking, we had a set of our recent graduates who were supporting ourselves in running and hosting the Cambridge Conference. They were helping us run breakout sessions. They were doing the things I was probably doing 10 plus years ago. And I spoke to some of them beforehand, and I said, you know, you're likely to be the geospatial leaders of the future. And they kind of looked at me and were like, well, maybe not actually, because, you know, the world of work is changing. People might have a five-year career or a 10-year career, but the important thing for us is how do we make sure that those professionals have geospatial embedded as kind of core to them so that when they go out into other disciplines, they remain with that geographic intensity, that geographic kind of curiosity and know where to get data from. And I guess the final bit was about investing in technologies. And I'm sure technology is something we'll come onto a bit later on about how technology is changing. So three really interesting and curious ways that we kind of framed the conversation.
So, for decades, certainly in the UK, we've evangelized geospatial by talking about its cross-cutting role in the planning and delivery of public services and all the other areas in sort of insurance and construction and telecoms and utilities. And it's been an uphill struggle. It's definitely been an uphill struggle. And I just wonder whether, and maybe we could talk about this on a global level rather than just on a UK level, right? Because, you know, I think we've made some headway in the UK, you know. I mean, certainly UK government recognises the value of geospatial to it. But if we look, talk globally, is geospatial about to take a seat at the top table in government across the world?
That's a great question. And it really does depend, I guess, on your definition of the top table. And there are so many different ways to cut, slice, and dice it. But ultimately, I believe geospatial is, or is already at least knocking on the door of those top tables. So we kind of have a really unique opportunity, both at a national level and at a global level, through the conversations we're having. As you say, we know, and, you know, not to bang a drum about it, but geospatial data does underpin everything from emergency response to disaster planning. Governments are realizing the strategic value of it. One of the things I've been pleased to see through one of the lenses I have within the UN system is the discussions we've been starting to have about the role of the global geospatial ecosystem, and how governments are starting to invest and starting to understand the need to invest in standalone geospatial data. That data often comes through for sustainable development purposes. So whether you're looking at the UN Sustainable Development Goals and the role that geospatial and statistical information has in empowering decision making, so mm-hmm. without knowing how your metrics are, you can't understand what implementation and what changes you need to put in place. So from a government level, geospatial is really up there. But also around digital transformation. And so there's a really key digital transformation piece that's happening, that if you were to look at most of the UN work at the moment, you're talking about the digital divide, closing the digital divide, and making sure that as countries transform, they take every opportunity they have to leapfrog, to make technological changes that organizations that are more established might struggle to do through a variety of legacy reasons. You know, we're an organization, Ordnance Survey, which is 230 plus years old. We have got a wonderful, rich heritage. We've got detailed data, but we have challenges in our systems. How do our systems interact? And that's where, as an organization, we're looking at technology to be an enabler for that. And so how do we help other people? How do other people use that technology themselves? So there's a two-pronged approach to that, making sure geospatial is embedded in policy. As you say, UK government has got a really strong government digital service, which is really leading on the policy aspects of geospatial. And that's something we're encouraging through the United Nations Integrated Geospatial Information Framework, which is a framework for national development. One of the key parts of that is about getting the policy element right. So how do you make sure that, you know, as you gave an example at the very beginning, that if you're a country that is starting or from a lower level of geospatial maturity, what do you need to do? And so, you know, that's where I say that geospatial really is becoming the top table. If you were to look a bit more broadly, I think the UN is taking a really strong and active approach in that. The Committee of Experts itself was probably a slight tangent, but I'll come back, has been set up for just over 16 years now. The UN has set up or adopted in 2015 a General Assembly resolution on geodesy. And actually, you know, the need for strong geodetic supply chains across the globe, because without geodesy, you can't understand where the Earth is, you can't have that accurate positioning, you can't do sea level rise, you can't do, you know, your banking transactions won't work if there's a loss of GNSS and GPS. But at a national level, countries can't do that on their own. So having a UN General Assembly resolution enables countries to learn from the UN Centre of Excellence on Geodesy in Bonn, who run training programs across the globe, and to strengthen those core elements that you can't do as an individual country. So it's not just anymore about collecting and managing data or using it. I think it's about making sure that every country looks at it through their own lens, looks at it through their own lens of geomaturity and where they need, want, and can be, and takes the appropriate steps to do that.
Okay. So I had a thought flash through my head. It's good that thoughts still flash through my head. as you were saying that, I did a podcast a year or so ago with the Caribbean Disaster Emergency and Emergency Management Team. And we had people from three of the Caribbean countries talking, and it was really clear how strong their dependence on geospatial data and, you know, all of that was, right? And it was great. But what I didn't ask them, and what it just occurred to me was, so those Caribbean governments understand the value of geospatial data for emergency planning and management. But we know from our experience that geodemographics enable us to better plan the provision of healthcare and education and transport services. And I wonder, is our experience, not at an NMA level, but at a government department level, is that being shared with people around the world as well?
That's a really tough question, but it's also a really frank question in terms of how we do it. So if I start from a UK perspective and then expand, you know, the UK government in 2018 set up the then Geospatial Commission, part of Cabinet Office, central part of government, recently moved into the Department of Science, Innovation and Technology, recently been changed from the Commission into Government Digital Service. And one of the roles of GDS is to do that cross-government understanding in the UK of how the different departments connect, use data. We are extremely fortunate in the UK that Ordnance Survey has a long-term contract with government, the Public Sector Geospatial Agreement, which allows that 10-year funding that we have to provide our data out as a national mapping agency to all parts of the public sector, from Cabinet Office and Number 10 through to your local town and parish council. Whenever we talk internationally, whenever I'm out giving talks, listening to people, learning, people always come to us and say, that model is fantastic. How do I get that in my country? Mm-hmm. So a lot of people recognize that there is a need for central alignment, central policy steers, central funding. But for a lot of countries, the way their government may be modeled, the way their government may be made up, there are still those silos between agencies. And we see it in the UK, there are still silos between our main agencies, but we are taking steps to overcome it. We hope in the UK that the National Data Library, one of DSIT's flagship initiatives, will really help to tie that together and provide the unlocks we need in the UK so that geospatial data is seen as a fundamental data layer as part of it. And so people are looking to the UK and to other countries to say, how do you do it and what do you need? For a lot of countries, as I said, the link is back through to that siloed approach, that departmental approach, and it's understanding how to break that, because a lot of people, funding, it does come down to funding. Funding is a product of a department's position within that government. So someone might have a real focus on healthcare. Therefore, the healthcare department gets all the money, in inverted commas, whereas the transport department might not. And of course, there then becomes that challenge between the two departments that they then start often creating geospatial data for their own needs, but without it coming together in a centralized point. So the more conversations we can have around the need for sustainable, strong funding over a long time period, so people don't have to come back on an annual basis to go, you know, my money's run out for this year, please can I have some more? That's something that people look to the UK for, and that's something we talk about when we go externally. We tell our story as a UK. We tell our story about how we're connected.
Okay. So I want to turn to trust and belief. And that might sound like a massive right turn or left turn, whichever way you see it. But for centuries, people have accepted and trusted maps, particularly because the government produced them and because the government was the only provider. With digital and multiple providers, and I'm thinking just for example for OpenStreetMap and Google, I mean, of course, there are others, but those two are the most common examples. Does that change? Do you think trust changes when Google or OpenStreetMap, which is described as a Wikipedia of maps, it's not a great description, but it helps to explain it.
I think the key thing is that trust is evolving, and I think that's a core element of it. You know, if I were to look back 10, 20 years ago, you see an Ordnance Survey map and you know who created it, you believe in the institution, you believe that that map has a certain level of trust with it. And that goes the same for other national mapping agencies, other departments. There is an inherent trust in that data, not just because we were the only providers of that data, but we had that ability to bring that data together. And it's a really live conversation, actually, about how the map is portrayed. The map, as you said, we said at the very beginning, is no longer a static thing. It's no longer a paper-based thing. It's part of a decision-making process. As you start to move into those conversations where the map is no longer visible, that's where you start to have an evolving conversation around trust. So if I can no longer see the map, can I trust it? If I can no longer see the provenance that it says, you know, Google in the corner, that has a certain standing with it, if it no longer says Ordnance Survey in the corner, there is a certain element of that that people start to understand the need to maintain that stamp. And that stamp could be about quality, it could be about timeliness, it could be against currency. We need to start to understand and start to talk about how that trust evolves and how that trust leans through what we do. If I was looking at it from an OS point of view, you know, we talk about the National Geographic Database, you know, 600 million features updated 30,000 times a day. That's great. When you start to ingest that into other people's data, if you start working with third parties, if you start looking at that consistency, how do we make sure that the end user of our data believes where it comes from? So that's where I talk about trust is evolving. One of the other things I like to think about is it's a good thing that people have access to multiple sources of data. You know, it really encourages innovation. It really encourages creativity. But I believe, and you know, some might say, well, of course you'll say it, but national mapping agencies do continue to have a role in that process. Often national mapping agencies will offer a level of authority for their own jurisdiction, which means that it is linked to the norms, the laws, the standards, you know, recognized patterns within that country. the verification element to it. We know that global platforms are very powerful. You know, there's a whole range of activity. You only need to look at geospatial press, you know, every month to see the new geospatial solutions and platforms that are being developed. They're all great to give people the choice. But I don't think they necessarily replace the need for national sovereign capabilities. And that's not to say that global companies can't be part of that value chain, can't be part of the supply chain. But actually, I think when it comes to sovereignty standards and long-term data continuity, that there will always be a role of the National Mapping Agency. And that, for me, is where the conversation around trust then moves on to.
Okay. So let's... I think... I might question that, James. I'm going to just question it a little bit, because I think more and more of Ordnance Survey's data collection and data management is technology driven. And of course, you've got these wonderful surveyors on the ground, which is a unique resource that only Ordnance Survey has got in the UK. But with satellite, aerial, machine learning, feature extraction, street view type, you know, sort of photographic surveys, the ability to generate point clouds automatic. I mean, you know, if you see the workflow that a Google has, for example, it is quite stunning, you know, and their ability to identify streets and road signs and all sorts of things. And I just wonder how much that willing... I mean, yes, national mapping agencies can adopt all of that, but these guys are doing it at a global scale, not a national scale, and they're doing it consistently on a global level. And I just wonder, do you think that's going to have an impact over the next decade or so?
Undoubtedly, absolutely it will. And, you know, if you are a global company, as you've just mentioned, you know, like Google, with multi-billion dollars or pounds of investment in workflow, of course you're going to have a major impact into a country, any country, you know, a small island developing state with a small national mapping agency, maybe 20 people. There is a role for global platform providers there. There's a role for global platform providers here in the UK. One of the things we talk about, and Nick, our CEO, talks about quite a lot, is our new strategy. Our new strategy is around better data and more destinations. And that essentially is about identifying, as the National Mapping Agency, and you talked about it totally unprompted, you know, we have a surveying workforce of around 300 people out on the ground across the UK capturing data. We supplement that with our flying program, where we ingest our own data. We use external supply chain to help us refine it. We have a technology department that does all the amazing tech stuff that I often smile and nod at, because I don't understand it and I don't need to understand it. As we talk about it, we're talking about how our own value chain as Ordnance Survey differs. So we've expanded and we've kind of really refined our own value chain into five core elements: positioning, sourcing, refining, distributing, and applying. You could argue it's the same value chain for different agencies. And positioning on the far left-hand side is about that accuracy of the data, you know, the physical where it is on the world. Applying is how you get that data to customers, how you get that data to service users. And there are different methods for that. You know, for Ordnance Survey for the UK, we have a model. A lot of countries have an open model where the data is out there and people can use it. A lot of countries are still trying to identify how they get the data from the government producer or from the producer out to the user. So you've kind of got the two elements of the value chain from that point of view. But the one I think was really important you started to pick up on there was that sourcing element. So there are different ways that people can source geospatial data. We no longer have 3,500-4,000 surveyors running around GB mapping it in the way we used to do. We have in recent months set up a fully qualified drone UAS team who can go out and do quick capture in a way that we couldn't do it before. So that's the way we're looking at our own sourcing, but we're also looking at identifying where we can use third-party data to supplement and support our own sourcing requirements so that that in itself brings its way through to be part of the national map. And it goes back to that trust question. It might not necessarily have to be Ordnance Survey collected data that makes its way into our outputs, but it needs to come through the value chain. It needs to be aligned with the broader customer requirements, and that value chain is something that, again, we see it talked about in a variety of different ways, but that's where I think there are so many different ways that it's for public sector, private sector to work together, and as you say, so it's not just about OS produced data anymore, it's more of a technology-led conversation.
Okay, so I'm going to wrap this up with a quote from your boss, and if Nick's listening, we want you to come on the podcast and talk to us at some length at some time in the future. But I just found this was really inspirational from Nick in his closing to the conference. He said, "We tend to focus on the machinery of the task, the processes, the tools, the knowledge, but fundamentally it's about the people. We heard talk about a love of maps, talk about trust, and talk about belief. Those are things that happen between human beings, not between organizations." And I thought that was really good because it sort of rooted us in the fact that it's all well and good having technology, and we can use technology to make things better, easier, faster, cheaper. But ultimately, this is about people having ideas and about using geospatial data. And it's not technology that's going to show us how to use geospatial data. It's geospatial professionals like you, like your colleagues, like my friends in the deep past, like me even. But, you know, it's people who come up with the ideas, you know, and the innovative ways to use the technology. It's not the technology that comes up with those. So thank you, Nick, for that. James, thank you very much for your time this morning. I'll put a link to the Cambridge conference in the show notes, everybody. So if you want to see the summary of the Cambridge conference, go and have a look in the show notes and you'll find it there. Nick, thanks for being on GeoMob.
Brilliant. Thank you, Stephen. It's great to have been invited and to share some of the stories that we have and to share with your listeners some of the work we do here at Ordnance Survey. So I look forward to listening to it back. Thank you very much.
Okay. Take care. Bye.
Thank you.
Thanks for joining us today on the GeoMob podcast. We hope you enjoyed the discussion. You can get the show notes over on the website, which is at thegeomob.com. And while you're there, you can sign up for our monthly newsletter and find links to our accounts on Mastodon and LinkedIn so that you can stay up to date on all our upcoming events. We hope to see you at an event soon.